You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. This is a chalice lighting from Erica Hewitt. The word courage comes from the Latin cor, which means heart. To encourage means to hearten, to impart strength and confidence. Let this be our work, to encourage one another, to be bold in engaging the world outside us, as well as what scares us inside, to give one another the confidence and the heart to live as fully as humanly possible. Well, as you probably know, I'm more inclined to look to nature than to the supernatural for meaning and guidance. Yet there is something big in this room right now that is rather mysterious, largely unseen, maybe even unseeable, but nevertheless, present and unignorable. This unseen elephant in this room is the collective noun we commonly call church, a collective made up of the congregation who is present, and all those in the past who have contributed to forming the way we do things, the sum of our group customs, habits, practices that we take for granted. Think of it as something natural, like an organism, made up of separate individual cells, just like your body, each cell with their own design, programming, and function, yet somehow cohering to form the complex, interdependent being made of diverse parts that is you. First-time visitors actually get a better view of the collective, since they are at first outside of it. But the more you become part of a whole, like fish put in a new aquarium, the less you are aware of the whole you are part of. Church is about lifting up the we consciousness. And what prevents us seeing it sometimes is the me consciousness, our default setting that encourages us to see ourselves as separated from the world, encased in our own skull, and at the very center of the things that happen around us. This default setting, this me consciousness, has been made even stronger by post-industrial consumerism that flatters us by offering endless choices so that the individual can order things just right inside their own little skull kingdoms. Sociologists have been writing for the last generation about a decline in communal spirit and community. Community organizations of all types and missions are struggling to find members because most are pursuing and maximizing their own individual self-interests. Even discussions around paying tax, for example, have all become about withdrawing our role in contributing to a common social fabric and putting more money into our own separate pockets. The idea is that enriching ourselves alone strengthens us. But does it? Does the loss of a social fabric not actually make us more vulnerable? Yet while we are becoming more atomized, we still know we are social beings by our nature. Cooperation and communication has been our evolutionary advantage since we came out of the trees. And the rise in the uglier and more primitive forms of collectivism, such as racism, tribalism, and jingoistic nationalism, are a natural result of an increasing sense of wanting to belong, to be absorbed into a simple, easy-to-recognize collective, based on obvious things like ethnicity or birth country. Well, in such times as these, how to think about and understand the collective we call a church, especially a church where we do not swear to a common set of truth claims. That was the role of the creed in creed-based churches. Here we give you a supernatural list of truths we can't see, but we all agree really do exist. Without such shared delusions, how then can we hold a collective of free agents together in a meaningful and effective way, gaining strength in numbers, benefiting from mutual support, and making life richer, more varied, fulfilled, and joyful? There's a poem by Rumi that speaks to this. Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshipper, lover of leaving. Ours is no caravan of despair. Even if you've broken your vows 1,000 times, it doesn't matter. Come, yet again, come. I have friends and family outside this church that ask me regularly, "So, Robbie, how's your flock doing?" My flock? As in sheep? And here I usually have to remind them that that's a conventional church way of describing the church collective, and that here any herding in a Unitarian church more resembles mustering cats. Well, maybe we can learn from nature about how animal collectives function together to provide a better life for all its individual members. There is an example in nature of collectivism, and a better one than a paddock of merinos lining up for the abattoir or a shearing shed. It's also a flock, but not of sheep. This is a reading for today. As geese flap their wings, they create an uplift for the bird following. By flying in a V formation, the whole flock adds 71% greater flying range than if any bird were to fly alone. If we share a common direction and sense of community, we can get where we are going more quickly and easily because we are traveling on the thrust of one another. Whenever a goose falls out of formation, it suddenly feels the drag and resistance of trying to fly alone and quickly gets back into formation to take advantage of the lifting power of the bird immediately in front. If we have as much sense as geese, we will stay in formation with those who are headed where we want to go, and we will be willing to accept their help as well as give ours to others. If a lead goose gets tired, it rotates back into formation and another goose flies in the point position. If we take turns doing the hard tasks and sharing leadership as well as the geese, we become interdependent with one another. The geese in formation communicate by honking from behind to encourage those up front to keep up their speed, and so that everyone knows where everyone is. If we honk, we need to make sure that it's positive and encouraging. When a goose gets sick or wounded or is shot down, two geese drop out of formation and follow it down to help and protect it. They stay with it until it is able to fly again or dies. Then they launch out on their own with another formation, or they catch up with the flock. If we have as much sense as geese, we too will stand by each other in difficult times, as well as when we are strong. With geese, you see, it's the practical benefits of mutual support, not kinship or dominance or anything like that, that really counts. While you could observe individual geese in the flock behaving in certain ways, what you cannot see is the unseeable law of nature that exists in the hive mind of the collective flock. The word for that invisible natural force is called synergy. Synergy is a natural law. Synergy is best explained as 1 + 1 = 2. Synergy helps you realize the value of others and encourages you to find willing members. Synergy leverages benefits exponentially greater than individual geese acting alone. These geese, of course, can't see the force of synergy as the nature of their flock's cohesion, but with our crucial outsider perspective, we can. The first time I offered that story about geese during my first month in the pulpit, an irate member said he objected to having his wisdom compared unfavorably to that of a goose. He left the church not long after. I suggest his missing of the point and his departure from a collective are not unrelated. True, you and I are more complex organisms than geese, but like geese, being inside the collective called a church, the group's dynamics can be invisible to us. Church is not a flock. It's never as easy and efficient as a V formation, and our energies are often scattered rather than synthesized. This scattering of energies makes the collective especially hard to balance. Too much emphasis on group cohesion, and you get a cult. Too much emphasis on the individuals getting what they want when they want it, and you get a social club, catering for the whims of members only. Well, we're certainly not a cult, and we're not a club, and the word community is too broad to be interchangeable with the specific kind of community called church. I mean, Norwood, Paynham, and St. Peter's, for example, is a community of people who just happen to live near each other. Liberal free churches like ours offer a specific kind of community based on shared purpose, They are called intentional communities, which also means you have to want to be in it. It means you freely choose to be here and aren't here by accident of geography, or worse, by pressure of kinship or friends. So church is not a cult, not a club, and not as simple as a community. What do we call our non-creedal church, then? Well, it matters what we call it. It matters how we understand our we consciousness, at least so that we can better convey what we are to those who might be in their own caravan of despair and will want to partake of the energy we can have together. You might be aware we are engaging in a public identity project aimed at representing clearly and effectively our collective identity, our we, to the wider community. We do this to differentiate ourselves from other such collectives and to attract those who are seeking the sort of collective we indeed are. We are trying to see clearly the we consciousness here that is real but hard to see. It is probably the most important project not merely of this ministry but of the coming century here for this church in Australia. For the decisions we make about how we represent ourselves, what our key intentions are, and what sections of the public are likely to respond to that identity will be the ones we have to live with, quite probably, for some time. If you think I exaggerate, consider who decided how the chalice symbol should look, what was it meant to convey, and to whom. Well, the world has changed dramatically since 1940, when it was conceived. Why bother with adapting to the environment we live in now? Again, nature, Darwinian survival, the natural selection of a competitive environment. Anyone care to have a guess at the rate of church closures in the last few years? The Pew Research Center says 4 churches close for every one that opens. And this, of course, does not include those churches which are open, but whose attendance has declined to the point that the patient is merely on life support and euthanizing it is beginning to present as a reasonable option. Does anyone want to guess which churches become extinct and which thrive and why? Well, that's a different talk, but I'll give you a hint. The extinction of any church is not an accident. It's a choice, a clear-eyed choice about what we are and who we are for. So the question of our collective identity is both essential and very difficult to discern, and especially difficult because we live in times when the idea of community itself has receded from view, leaving only individuals maximizing their likes and minimizing their dislikes. And all of the many tedious discussions about Unitarian identity share the common feature of getting gridlocked into what the individuals like, what they want their UUism to be. I want more social events. I want more scholarship. I want more mindfulness. I want more atheism. I want more social justice and political action. I want what I want is the common feature, and it always neuters the progress of the collective. Community groups everywhere and of every type are struggling to survive. And yet we yearn, as never before, to belong somewhere, to something unshakable, for something meaningful, and to belong with others. Animal instincts won't take us forward. Wise discernment, involving a broad outsider perspective, will. Regardless of what we end up calling ourselves, we are constituted for a specific function. Church is a very specific kind of community based not on natural forces like maintaining kinship ties or maximizing consumption. Church was a human invention, beginning as a vision of an unseen possibility, the bringing of people together who would never have been brought together, in right relationship to each other and to the world. St. Paul essentially invented it in the first century after his sudden and dramatic conversion to Jesus' revolutionary message of compassionate inclusion, a message set in a world segregated by gender, by tribe, by nation, by empire, by money, and by class. The early churches were comprised of national and tribal subgroups that formerly had nothing to do with each other. Greeks who brought their many old gods and new philosophies with them. Jews who brought their one Abrahamic God as well as their tribal kinship and traditional texts and practices. Church brought together men and women, slave and free, rich and poor. That project of radically inclusive community building called church is 2,000 years old and still far from realized. And its aim of finding a way to survive and thrive as human beings together, despite differences, cannot be abandoned if we would go forth to a land where we are unbound at last from the slavery of the isolated self, self alone and above all? How can we hope to succeed where so many have failed? Is church even possible anymore? Well, none of the seven C's I've touched on, creed, cult, church, community, club, and consumerism, provides as promising a way forward as this last C, covenant. Unitarians may not have a creed, but we do have a covenant, not with a higher power, as the Jews do with their Abrahamic God, but a covenant with each other. The best illustration I can give of one person's decision to covenant is sadly not natural, but fictional, from J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. You know the story. Powerful forces are enslaving the world. A special meeting of leaders of diverse races and nations and tribes is called, all of whom are willing and able to save the world, but they all begin arguing. A retreating caravan of despair seems the inevitable outcome. But it is Frodo, the least dominant looking of these, who steps forward and says, I will take the ring to Mordor, though I do not know the way. He puts himself forward and commits to an action for the collective good and asks for their help. His I becomes a we, and it transforms the scattered collective into synergy. He surrenders his personal agenda for something larger, and that binds the different races, tribes, and classes. And the good news is this church, like most Unitarian churches, has such a covenant. We have not been great about making sure you know what it is. I've distributed copies today, and they're here. Are you ready to commit to something beyond yourself? Can you help synergize this diverse collective? The late, great, influential Dutch theologian Henry Nouwen said this of the type of community church tries to build. He said, community is where the person you least like always lives. Community is where the person you least like lives. If you don't really want that, and you are looking to exclude and not include, and if so, you have come to the wrong place. You are looking for membership in a social club, and there are better social clubs out there. And nearly 20 years ago, the last minister but one said those very words on this pulpit. I was here, and I heard it. He took tremendous heat for saying it. But has anything really changed in 20 years? What we are, and who we are for, is the same question. Who we are for is what we are, and we are not for ourselves alone. Knowing what we are together, and who we are together, and who we are for together, deeply knowing it, saying it through word and image so it can be heard and hearkened to by people we have not yet met, encourages us to reach out to others to bind up a disparate world, and anything less is worth neither my stipend nor the precious time and energy of your one human life. Let us be about the work of building that community together, whatever we want to call it. Amen. Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitariansa@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.